I'll be honest with you, Wendy. This music is scaring me. I'll be honest. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leffitz, Wendy Snyder. That part especially scared me. Welcome to the show. For the next couple hours, we'll do our best to entertain and enlighten you, and then we've got the bonus hour where we won't do as much entertaining or enlightening. We will talk at some point about the Michael Jackson special. Part 2 was aired last night on HBO.
And the Oprah.
And the boy, that was an interesting component, wasn't it? That really was. You even said when you came in, it took you Oprah Winfrey to kind of understand it all, huh?
Honest to God. Watching part one, I didn't not believe these victims.
Right.
But it was, you just wondered, I don't know. I wasn't sure how I felt. Part two, I believed the victims. Oprah then really hit home by explaining things and talking to these two victims and the director of this documentary. It opened my eye. You know, you think abuse, you think brutality, you think terrible things. This was
rougher episodes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, so in your mind, you're like, well, this isn't abuse, but it is totally abuse. And I totally believe these victims. And I hope that they can heal from it. One of them is on his way. Wade is a little farther along than James.
He seems to be. What stood out for me more yesterday, for people who don't know, it was a two-part documentary. Part one aired Sunday night. Part two aired last night. And then Oprah Winfrey did about a 45-minute or 50-minute follow-up afterwards with the two guys who were involved in it. The manipulation really stood out. The grooming, yes.
I knew nothing about that.
But I'm sure he's not the only child abuser who figures out early on that the way to do it is to turn the child that you're abusing against everybody and make it seem like it's you and me against the world. And he was really good at it.
But also grooming the family, which Oprah went in to describe a little bit more, where you win the trust of them.
Because
those moms were both groomed. And at the end, when Oprah asked if you forgive your moms, both of them were asked that. They said, you know, forgiveness doesn't happen overnight. It's a road.
Yeah.
And we're in the process.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, just a terrible situation, and you just want to like scream at the moms, going, "How do you not know this?"
Did you notice the similarity by which he did these things to both the two now men at the time boys? It was I know that there are parallels to Bill Cosby's case and to R. Kelly's case and stuff like that, but he went through almost the same paces with each of the two boys, including what you said, which was winning the family's trust over. But you can almost look at the benchmarks in each of the two cases. Mm-hmm. And even as they were telling their stories, you could just see them identifying with each other, saying, yep, that's pretty much what happened to me. When it was over, I was so ready for it to be over. It was so hard to watch, and you couldn't stop watching it. And then I thought when it was over, I'm so glad this is over because I can't sit through any more of this. It's so gut-wrenchingly hard to watch this. But then I thought, but think about the victims and the victims' families who, now that these 2 days are over and we've seen the documentary, for a lot of us, it's over. It's never going to be over for them, ever.
And I believe Wade said the death threat started after the episode one was aired. And, I mean, listen, fan of Michael Jackson or not, the guy was a genius in the way of music and dance. And he, as Oprah said, at that point, he was bigger than God.
He was the most recognizable and probably most popular person in the world at the time.
And no one's taken that from him. I don't think anyone's as popular.
No. Didn't she say during the special that the business is different now?
Yeah.
That you can't achieve. I mean, I know they said that about Elvis Presley, and they said that about the Beatles, and they said it about Michael Jackson, but I'm starting to believe it. Everything is so spread out now that it's hard to reach that kind of level.
And Elvis Presley started dating Priscilla when she was 14. If you start looking at all these things, all not very good.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that it's out in the forefront right now and people can talk about it. And we're going to be talking to a couple of people who are the founders of Parents Against Child Abuse. This needs to be talked about. I learned a lot. I mean, I think I often said I'd know if my kid was getting abused. I would know this. I would never allow this to happen. You can be fooled.
Right.
So it needs to be talked about. People who have that, wasn't the whole audience that Oprah had victims of abuse?
Victims and their support group, like whoever they're close to, you know, a husband, a wife, a boyfriend, a girlfriend. Yeah.
And Anthony Edwards, I had completely forgotten about him.
Was he there? I didn't.
He spoke.
Oh, did he?
That was one of one of the doctors that she talked to, or an author of a book, and then Anthony Edwards, and I'm looking at him, you know, and then as I'm listening to him talk and seeing Anthony Edwards on the graphic, I'm like,
together.
Oh my God, that's the guy from ER. So he has started support groups, and I mean, it was, it was an eye opener, and I love Oprah. I mean, leave it to her to help describe some of this stuff. You think abuse, you think brutality, you think, oh my God, this terrible thing. Abuse comes in many different colors.
And didn't you think that possibly as a victim herself, she kind of knew a direction by which to approach it all? It was so hard to watch. But like I said, you needed to kind of take it all in to realize the scope of how awful this is, that at the time they both thought this was the greatest thing in the world, that this guy hand chose them to be his best friend, quote unquote. But no, it ruined their lives.
Totally ruined their lives and their families' lives.
Horrible. Horrible, horrible.
We'll talk more about this later. It's a Tech Tuesday. We're going to take a quick break and talk to Bridget Carey and find out what's going on in the world of tech. Oh, yeah, it's a Tech Tuesday, and Bridget Carey is on the line with us, senior editor at CNET. And, Bridget, we've got you a little early today because you have some special CNET assignments to take care of today, correct?
I am just a busy tech reporter, Wendy. There's always something going on.
Well, speaking of technology, in about a minute and 12 seconds, we are going to interrupt for the emergency broadcast. What is it now? The EAS test.
That's
emergency
right.
Alert system. So we will be interrupted by that. In the meantime, I don't have a lot on my Instagram account, but if I delete everything, what will JetBlue do for me?
You could be entered to win a year of free flights. So, yeah, if you don't have a lot of your Instagram account, now's the time to enter that contest because it ends on Friday. there's this promo they're doing at a time where we're all sick of social media. You know, I know a lot of people for Lent try to give up social media anyway, so maybe it is a good time. You could delete, clear everything on your Instagram, and then you have to put on there is just like a promotional type message. They have the rules on there. So you have to put like one post that promotes JetBlue in the specific wording and the specific way that they want it done. And you should leave it up there until the contest ends. And so then you'll know if you won or not. But yeah.
Pretty exciting.
All right,
hold your thought because we now have an EAS test and I hope you pass. I think we have an all clear now. All right, back to you, Bridget. Already in progress. You can register. Is it jetblue.com just to find out more information about this?
Yeah, and, you know, I have nothing to do with JetBlue, but I'm just kind of laughing at, like, that's the state of our world now, like, to enter a contest, just, you know, delete everything, just give up on social media, and they think that, you know, it'll get people to do it, so it's interesting to, you know, see that, that's the flavor of our attitude now, I think.
It's funny, because people are learning about this through social media, but they're kind of condemning it as part of their ad campaign.
Yeah, exactly, and we all are kind of eye-rolling so much right now on social media, and yet it's very hard to take a step back, right?
We've been eye-rolling for 30 years, though, haven't we? What turns 30 this month?
The internet turns 30, the World Wide Web. Are you web crawling? Are you surfing? this month in March, you know, it marks the 30th year of going online.
Although 30 years, have we really been online for 30 years? Or is it just like some, you know, corporations
were
on?
It was in-house for a while, right? It wasn't for everybody for a while.
Yeah, you had to be pretty nerdy, like Matthew Broderick War Games nerdy, to kind of like, you know like how to get on this World Wide Web and access everything. I mean, for most folks, their first interactions with this were like when they signed up for AOL, and at school we had Netscape and everything. So like that was my first interactions, and my dad would say, "Hey, I'm going to get this AOL thing," and they charge per minute on the phone line. You know?
Oh, so, yeah.
Like, so like, be careful how much you're using when you play these games. You know, I only have so many minutes.
And Bridget, in those early days, Amazon had same year delivery, didn't they?
Oh, man. If you look at interviews of Jeff Bezos from back when he launched Amazon, I mean, he just did this for books only, and he's like, "I think this is, the future." And you're like, now he's like the richest man ever.
The thing I remember most about then was if you were online, if you were doing something online and you got a phone call, it ended your online service. It was one or the other. You couldn't be online and on the phone at the same time.
Right.
Oh, yeah, it was the bane of every middle schooler when their parents picked up the phone while they were chatting online. It was like, "Mom,
right.
you ruined my chat game."
Right. But Wendy's right. In those early days, it wasn't accessible to everybody. You had to be connected through your company somehow, right? You couldn't just get a computer and be online back then.
Yeah, there are ways always around it, but you had to be savvy, you know, and it's just the resources to be savvy just weren't, it wasn't there, but everyone got those AOL discs in the mail.
Sure.
and so that's where most folks kind of headed because of how it made sense in that way, but you didn't have to pay necessarily. Like,
there are people still paying, so I just want to put that PSA out there. If you're still getting charged at AOL.com, please call them. They're not going to call you and say, "Hey, you don't have to pay anymore." But as of 2 years ago, I knew people who were still paying a monthly fee.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually spoken to people who knowingly are paying the fee because they rather go through that software portal than just go into their browser and type, AOL.com/mail. They rather have the welcome, you got mail interface for $5, and it's not a good experience, and they're being ripped off.
Bridget, we only have time for one more. Talk about what's going on over at Facebook. They've changed their authentication rules, huh?
Well, it's more like every day there's something you eye roll about with Facebook, and there is this security person who is kind of pointing out something. When you want to protect your account, your password from hackers, this goes for any website, you want to sign up for something called two-factor. It basically says, all right, once you put in your password from a new computer, we're also going to text you a code to your phone, and then you can unlock your account. You know, it makes it harder to be hacked because your password gets leaked so easily, right? And we all should sign up for these things. But what Facebook did on this security service, if you signed up to have like your phone number be like your second password backup code, essentially, they made your phone number easily accessible to advertisers. Your friends could search for you by your phone number. They're blurring the lines of security and all that data that they're after. And so a lot of security researchers are crying out this week going, you are making it untrustworthy. You are causing problems for people, because if you don't trust it, then you won't do it. And then you're easily, hacked more by only having, not an extra layer of protection. There is a thing that you can do, though, if you're kind of annoyed by this news. It's a little more effort, but there is the option, instead of a phone number being a code being texted to your phone number, you download a special app to give you that code.
Oh.
So it won't come to you via a text message. Instead, it'll say, to get your code to get in, open up this Google Authenticator app. Or there's a couple flavors out there, but
all right.
I use this at my work. So something to look into, but it's
very
annoying.
Good.
And go into the settings on your Facebook page and make sure that your phone number is not accessible to people, because then all of a sudden you get a call from a Facebook friend and you're wondering how they got in touch with you. So go into your settings. If you're not sure how to do it, you can Google that. Bridget.
But that's the thing. Even if you didn't have security, you had no option to block it from people searching you. Mm. So that's why people were so mad,
It's not fun anymore. Happy 30 years of hell.
Wow.
Bridget, thanks.
Here's an animated gift for you.
Yes. Thank you so much. We can find Bridget Carey at CNET.com, on Twitter at Bridget Carey, and Instagram Bridget Happens. Thank you so much on this Tech Tuesday.
I'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Bye, Bridget. All right, a quick break, some news, and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
This sounds like Toe Jam and Earl music. Did you ever play that game?
No.
God, I loved it on my Sega Genesis.
I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
A new one was just released last Friday.
What did you call it?
Toe Jam and Earl.
That's what I thought.
It's just a fun... It's like...
What's the goal? What are you trying to do?
You have to put together a rocket ship and...
I do that in real life. I don't need to do that in a video game. That's my hobby.
Because you're a rocket scientist.
Yeah, video games are not rocket science.
No. No, they're not.
Rocket science?
That's rocket science.
They use videos to put together rockets.
That's true.
Yeah, it's all connected.
It's all
on
connected.
YouTube. You can get those on YouTube now.
Yeah. I learned something very valuable about myself yesterday, Wendy.
Let's hear.
I was watching the news, and I saw this story, a miraculous story, of these two little girls in California that went wandering off into the forest preserve. And of course, their family and everybody thought the worst. What if we never find these girls?
But then a nice little bear took care of them.
No, this is the one. This is the one story this year of a child getting lost where a bear did not figure into the story at all. Somehow, maybe the bears are off this week or something. I don't know why. The two girls, Leah Carrico and her 5-year-old sister Caroline, wandered off the ranch into the forest preserve. They think they walked about 6 miles, and then they were lost for the whole weekend. They found them on Sunday, not just alive, but alive and well, miraculously.
Scary.
But here's what I realized. They said that they survived because of techniques that they learned through the 4-H club. I would not have survived. Those two little girls somehow figured out how to make this work. They didn't panic. There was never a moment of panic. They were taught by the 4-H club that when you get lost, it's best not to continue on. It's best to just stay in one place. I would have thought the exact opposite.
You would have just walked in a big circle.
I would have walked in a circle for 2 days and then just given up, just laid down and given up. But I would not have thought of that, but it was explained to them that you're easier to find if you just stay in one place. That way, if people are out searching for you, you don't just keep missing each other. I would have thought, no, you in my head, you walk until you find civilization. Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, I would never have. I would have cried. You know that.
Immediately.
You would have survived. Bertrand, I could figure would have figured something out.
Really?
Really? You wouldn't? I would just panic.
Yeah.
And I would try and retrace my steps. I would try and go back where I came from, because I would have left little bits of bread.
Oh, you would have brought bread with you?
Mm-hmm.
I traveled with an astrolab, so I would have been able to find my way with the stars.
Were you guys Boy Scouts?
I was a Cub Scout for 1 year. Not in good standing.
I was going to say, I could see Bill at the Cubs. No,
not
that's,
in
not,
good
that's
standing
not how you
at
do
all.
It. I wouldn't tie a
like,
knot that way.
There were kids that had merit badges completely covering their shirts.
What was yours then?
I don't remember having a single merit badge. I don't think
you
I was in
sash?
For a year. Yeah. That's not nice. But yes.
I don't know if you guys... I think you guys did have sashes. I was
do
a bluebird.
Cover that sash.
There were no Girl Scouts in our area, so I was a bluebird, which turned into a campfire girl.
Oh, I remember them.
Campfire girls, yeah.
Sing around the campfire, join the campfire girls. I remember that.
You just remember the logo, the commercial.
Yeah.
But I hated it, and we just made crafts. There was no kind of...
Adventure?
Or survival techniques.
Well, I think it depended on, I don't know if the breakdown was the same for you, but for us in the Cub Scouts, it all depended on who your den mother was or your troop leader. Like, there were kids at meetings that were going off and exploring trails and stuff, and we were just making things out of, like, pineapples.
Popsicle sticks.
Yeah.
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 That was a big one. Didn't you have the big Pinewood Derby and the
we did have that.
Regatta?
I was a Cub Scout leader for
we did have
really?
That
a year or two
a
years.
A leader?
Yeah.
And you still couldn't get yourself out of a forest?
I mean, I was one of the bad ones. That's what I forgot about it until Bill brought it up.
Did you go on the camping trips and drink beer with the other folks?
Oh,
I think we had one. I don't think we had any camping trips. We had one. Maybe one overnight camping trip.
I didn't ever go on a camping trip. And then there's the Indian guides and Indian princesses.
Right.
They, a lot of our neighborhood, my kids really weren't that into it. I probably should have sent them, but they did a lot of camp outs.
And they follow some of the bylaws of Native Americans,
yes.
Right? There's some tie-in to the Native Americans.
And they were much more fun than the Girl Scouts, because I had a couple of girls' friends that were those, you know, Indian princesses, and they had much more fun. The Girl Scouts, we did nothing. We cooked. We did cooking badges. Ugh.
You learned how to be a wife.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Squaw.
Sewing badges.
No, Girl Scouts.
Oh, and Girl Scouts would be a wife.
Yeah. My brother's an Eagle Scout. Once an Eagle Scout, always an Eagle. He really,
that's
he
nice.
Sewed his own patches on his, I mean, he was really into it.
Yeah.
So if I was with my brother, I could survive, but I could not survive anything.
All I remember is, like, they taught us, and I mean, I already kind of knew this, but they reinforced that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and then they go, so if you ever get lost, and I would nod, but then I thought, yeah, but then what? Like, if I didn't know which direction I got lost in, it wouldn't help me to know that the sun is there. And unless it's dead east or dead west, if it's just up in the middle of the sky, then I just twirl around in a circle.
See, and I was always taught, if you get lost, go to the Orange Julius and we'll meet you there.
I think that only works in shopping centers. That only works at Ford City.
Do you know what the four H's stand for?
Heart,
health, heart,
hand.
Right, there are a couple. There,
Horatio.
I think
Horatio?
You got it. No.
Honda?
You said heart, hands,
heart,
and
hand,
health.
Health.
What's the first
help?
One? No.
Head smarts.
No, just head.
Just your head.
Come on.
I thought head smarts. You got to have head smarts.
Who says head smarts?
I don't know.
a kid with an empty sash. That's
with
you.
Thank you, Steve. With the Pinewood Derby that Mary just mentioned, this is the car race where you're given just a chunk of wood, and then it's up to you and your dad or your guardian to carve it into a car.
You
and
carve
then,
it?
Yes. And my best friend Bob, his dad was an engineer, so he brought the wood to work, and a team of engineers worked on his car. They put weights and part of the car, and they made it aerodynamic.
Oh my God.
Those were the dads that drove you nuts.
And then my car, because my dad just put some scotch tape on it, and we put a little Weeble guy on the front to drive it. I blew my friend Bob's car out of the water. I destroyed him.
Really?
So, yeah. And I think there were four or five cars all going down this ramp at once, and my car was by far the fastest. And there's no explanation for it, because my dad didn't have that kind of ability, and I certainly didn't. But somehow we won the first heat of the race, and then in the second one.
You got blown out.
We were done. Yeah. Yeah. But that was like the highlight. That one year in the Cub Scouts, because after 2 or 3 weeks, I was done with it. My mom's like, oh, no, you signed up for it.
Yeah, because you didn't know what it was, and probably all your friends joined.
Well, in magazines, when you saw a kid that was in the Cub Scouts, he was going off and he was climbing rocks and finding eagles' nests and stuff like
right.
that. And we were just making stuff out of washers and stuff. It was, just, I don't know.
Maybe if you were a Boy Scout in a more rural area or more
I
in
bet
the
that
wilderness,
would be more exciting.
Like in Minnesota, I bet they learned more.
Yeah, because you'd be in a canoe a lot of the times or going down rapids. But
did you guys subscribe to Boys Life?
Yeah. I think you got that as part of being a Cub Scout or a Boy Scout.
Yeah, I think
Scout.
It was part of
it. Oh, it was?
They just
I didn't
sent
think
you
it
a
was,
monthly.
I think my Boy Scout.
Correlated.
That. Yeah.
I used to read my brother's Boy's Life.
There were a lot of kids with crew cuts. That's all I remember about it, is they were just kids with very scrubby, clean-looking kids with crew cuts doing good deeds.
Yeah, that's not for you.
No. I don't need to see that. And it hurts my feelings to see stuff like that. All right, we'll take a break, and then there's more show. We're 312-981-7200 if you want to join in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.com. I don't remember how this started, but we began talking about scouting. How did it start?
Because the little girls that survived.
That's how.
You started it.
I can't remember. You started it.
They survived. They drank rainwater.
Leah Carrico and her 5-year-old sister Caroline. Yes, that's another thing I would never think of. But how do you get water when you're out in the forest preserve? They took leaves off of trees.
And licked them?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I know that now.
Yep.
We're one step ahead of the game if
now
we ever
we are.
Get lost.
Yes, true.
And
you never licked a leaf?
I don't think I ever have, Steve.
Steve ate paste, crayons, you licked a leaf. What else?
Well, just for emergency drills, sometimes you go out and lick a leaf after it rains so you know how to do it.
Oh.
Right. It's like Neil Gibbons when he said, ever eat a pine tree?
Did you know pine cones are edible? So are picnic tables.
And then he died, that guy.
I know.
He ate too many pine cones.
Yep.
So then we were talking about 4-H, and these two girls, 5 and 8, were 4-H members. Do you know? You want to know the pledge?
Yeah, what's the pledge, Wendy?
This is from 847. I pledge my head to clearer thinking, my heart to greater loyalty, my hands to larger service, and my health to better living for my club, my community, my country, and my world.
That's beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah. That's very inspirational.
Am I too old to join the 4-H club?
No, you can get in there. You can get in. They would love to have you.
Yeah, I'm sure they would.
I remember the Cub Scout one was just obey the laws of the pack, and then you made like a weird symbol with your hand.
Vince, is that true?
Yeah, that's true.
Obey the laws of the pack, Vince. Now I'm making a weird shape with my hand.
Scout law. Okay, here are the scout laws. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent.
You Wendy, only have two.
I was just going to say, together I don't think we have four of those. Wow.
That's why we weren't in Scouts.
Wow.
Yeah, now I wasn't in Scout as a kid, but my son just joined the Scouts a year ago, and I never made a Pinewood Derby car. So my wife was kind of like watching me hack away at this piece of wood, and she's like, do you even know what you're doing? And I was like, no, but I'm trying. And we won second place.
Oh, nicely done.
Thank you.
And Vince, tell Wendy, when you start out with this thing, it doesn't even closely resemble a car. It's a chunk of wood. That's it, right?
It is a block of wood with a couple of nails and little plastic wheels. And so you really got to build this thing from scratch.
Yep.
I thought you got like 2x4s. You had to actually cut this wood yourself?
Yeah.
Well, they give away, at Christmas time, during the last pack meeting of Christmas time, they give the boys a little bag, and inside is this little Pinewood Derby box, and then they say, okay, well, Pinewood Derby races are going to be in, at the end of February, so, get to work on
those.
And so, yeah.
And then the day before the race, a lot of people do. They start to carve that piece of wood.
Yeah, you're cutting into this thing and sticking weights inside and just trying to make it meet the weight limit, was it 5 ounces? And then you got to go weigh in. Last year we won second place, and this year we won third, so we're going back to district.
That's excellent. Congratulations.
What does that teach you in the grand scheme of life? What does that teach you?
Well, the cool thing
can happen.
Is the boys, anything can happen. And the boys, like, as they get older, they start to build it themselves. Like, for the most part, I hand my son a piece of sandpaper and say, here, you need to buff it while I, work on wheels or something. So, and paint it and decorate it. And so they, more and more they get into the hardware of it and stuff. So.
Vince, what does this mean? I remember, like, when we would go to troop meetings, the older Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, I guess, the Cubs, you start out as a bobcat, you build yourself up. The older kids, they would say this to each other. They'd go, Aquila. What does that mean when you say Aquila? Do you know?
Aquila is...
Aquila.
My boys did that too, but I don't remember.
Aquila.
Isn't it a Weeblo?
Ryan
isn't
says
that...
it's a wolf.
Yeah,
is it a wolf?
An animal. Yeah.
So was that a warning that there was a wolf behind me? Because I didn't know what they were telling me. Aquila. And then somebody else would go, obey the laws of the pack. And they would nod toward each other like...
The wolf pack?
I don't know if it was the wolf pack or just the pack. I don't know.
So you're a leader now, Vince?
Yeah, I just kind of, kept showing up to my son's meetings. And they're like, all right, you're a leader now.
Wow.
All the training and things, So it's kind of like, ties back into every sport you guys have been talking about lately. I listen to you guys all the time, by the way.
Thank you. How old are your kids? Excuse me. I didn't mean to interrupt.
We have one boy. He's 8.
Okay, so younger.
That's perfect.
So have you done camping trips? Will you do camping trips?
We did a camping trip last year for his first one with the pack, but we're camping families. We've gone anyway, even before then. But we've gone with the pack, and the older boys who are earning their way into the Scouts have to, start a fire, and that's what allows them to pass certain and earn certain badges and build their own tent, on their own.
Well, building a fire is important in case they ever have a restaurant that's not making money. You got to know how to start a good fire.
Well, that, and, you know, in case you ever run into two, you know, strange girls who were in 4-H, they knew how to, you know, go out the water, but the boys knew how to start fire.
Right.
Or if you want to go on Survivor.
Oh, yeah, that's true, Mayor. Very true. And, Vince, do you have to, or do you get, let me rephrase that, do you get to wear a uniform as the leader of the pack? You do not?
I don't. The other pack leaders do. So, I mean, I'm not the only one. There's, you know, the other guys are, you know, one of them is an Eagle Scout. And so his promise when he became Eagle Scout was to always be part of a troop. And so that's why he's really the, you know, one of the head guys on in our pack.
Oh, okay.
But I've gone to the Scout store.
Yeah.
And they have really cool, like, you know, Scout Dad shirts and Scout Dad hats and stuff. So I picked up the gear, you know, just so I could blend in.
Yeah.
That's cute. Yeah. Vince, we only have a minute, but now, wasn't it just figured out that girls could join the Boy Scouts, but it's still called the Boy Scouts, right?
It's called the Scouts of America now, so it's no longer called the Boy Scouts. It's called the Scouts, and we have a couple of girls in our troop as well, but because one of them was a sister who, a year ago, was really at the meetings all the time anyway, and so she was pretty much doing the crafts on the side, and now we have our meetings at the same time, kind of on the opposite side of the room, but then certain activities are done together. So it's kind of a, you know, blended, you know, not 100%, you know, that they're with us.
Were the kids all for this, Vince? Were they on board with this, or did it take some convincing?
Oh, it was totally, you know, seamless.
Good.
It was like, oh, yeah, she's here anyway, you know.
Oh, good.
So are Girl Scouts, are there no longer Girl Scouts, and could a boy join a Girl Scout?
There still are Girl Scouts. There hasn't been any talk lately, at least around me, Elgin, of the boys wanting to join the Girl Scouts. But so far, it's just been, you know, a couple of girls that joined our troop. And,
good for them.
It's been seamless. It's been really cool. It's been, you know, pretty, you know, nobody really talked too much about it besides saying, hey, this is something new, but we're just going to go with it since we're already here.
The coolest thing is when I was in Bobcats for that 1 year is our school, which wore uniforms normally. It was a Catholic school. They would let you wear your Cub Scout uniform to class, so you felt like you were pretty hot walking around.
So that's why you did it?
I was a man in uniform.
For the outfit?
Yeah. Just to say, look at this.
I bet you look pretty dapper.
Well, that's nice of you, Vince. Thank you.
Vince, nice talking to you. Good luck with scouting.
Thank you.
If you want Wendy and I to come in and speak to the troop, just let us know, okay?
Sounds good.
All right. I'll wait by the phone.
What are we going to speak about? We've got none of the virtues.
I'll just yell Aquila. Because you can't believe the respect, like a guy, you know how you hear that Semper Fi thing with the Marines? That was like for Cub Scouts, they would just, you know, they would go just Aquila, and then everybody would nod like, yeah, Aquila, yeah. But I didn't know what it meant. I would just nod along. Just go, yep, put me down for an Aquila.
A wolf. You're a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yes.
Or is it the other way around? Sheep and wolf's clothing.
Either way, I had costume changes.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He is in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and you are listening to 720 WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and a really important subject that we want to talk about today. On the heels of the Neverland special, Leaving Neverland. It was on HBO, part one and part two, and then Oprah's part. And we have the founders of PAXA, Parents Against Child Abuse, Tanya and David Haig. Thank you for coming up today.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
I was telling you off the air, we've been discussing this Michael Jackson thing. I don't know what the ratings were, but I think a lot of people tuned into it. Part one, I got to be honest with you, I was iffy about the victims, and I felt guilty about feeling that way. But I didn't have any evidence. It was their word against his word. Part two, I believed the victims 100%, and then it took Oprah to even make me understand more. I mean, we think of child abuse as brutality and terrible things that are happening. You know, Michael Jackson seemed to do it in a loving way. I'm not saying it's right, but it changed my view. Then I realized, boy, these boys were just completely taken advantage of, and it's disgusting. But it took Oprah to help me understand some of this stuff. Now, this is unfortunately a pretty common problem.
Yes, so
I'm so naive to all this.
Right, so like we were talking off the air, unless you yourself have been a survivor or have someone close in your circle to have a little bit of insight of what happens or what kind of sexual abuse, what it looks like. It comes in different shapes and forms, and there's so much manipulation that these predators are doing to our children, starting as little as how whatever age they're attracted to, zero, but once they become verbal, all the way up to age 17. And it's so nuanced depending on the age, but it is the way these survivors were able to articulate and help us, the viewers, understand, like, all the things that Michael Jackson would do. That is grooming. Those are grooming tactics. And it's a word that...
I didn't even know what grooming meant till Oprah explained it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so this is one of the things that's really important to take note of. Oprah made it pretty clear that it's not just pushing someone up against the wall and sexually assaulting them. It's creating an environment where the predator is able to kind of bring the victim into the abuse and make them feel like they're part of it. And they do this, like in the documentary, by providing gifts, by grooming family members and even other children that they might not have molested. They do this to build credibility in the event that accusations come up in the future. And that blame sharing with the victims, that we're in this together, we're showing our love in this way, we have to keep this secret, is really a way for the predator to move and shift the blame onto the victims.
Ugh. He's molesting them not just physically, but mentally at almost the exact same time, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
They go hand in hand. Yeah, 100%. Right. They go hand in hand. So in order for a little kid to kind of go with the flow, if you will, the grown-up is really in charge of that whole process. It's not like the kid's like, yeah, I'm all in on this, I'm so curious. Yeah. No, they are saying, like, this is a game, like all these things, like, oh, we're just cozying up, or I love you so much, this is this bond. So Michael Jackson's a great example, but normal, average people are doing the same tactics.
And it's mainly people you know?
Yes!
And that's exactly it. Yes. That's the biggest problem with this epidemic. Oftentimes, the vast majority of times, it's someone that the child knows. I think
90%.
Most parents...
That high?
Yes. Yeah, most parents are very good at the stranger danger component of protecting children. Most parents, when they're at a park, watch out for the scary man in the trench coat. And that's good. But what they're not willing to do is take that same level of scrutiny and apply it to people that they care about, or family members, or people in their church or synagogue. And so that's really what we're trying to do at PAXA. We're trying to say, hey, parents, you're the last line of defense for your children.
First and last line of defense. Yeah.
Which, like, these victims' parents seem to have dropped the ball, but it was all part... I mean, I was mad at them, and even the victims are having a tough time forgiving them. They're on the path to doing that. But as a parent, you think, I would never do this, but they were bamboozled too.
Great word. We often use the word bamboozled because, you know, these were middle-class families, huge opportunity. It's a superstar, like, top global stardom, and they're being plucked from the crowd, if you will, to say, oh, you're so special, let me give you this life. So part of the grooming process is to win over mom, maybe isolate dad, or whatever that barrier might be. Again, Michael Jackson did it easily because he was very wealthy and successful.
Right.
But it can come in different forms, too, to manipulate the situation, where it could be like a coach of a soccer team, and he's like really cozying up with mom, and he's like kind of saying, like, oh, like kind of alienating some other family members to be like, you don't, it's to start bringing this bad vibe.
Right.
But it's all that formula, whether you're Michael Jackson or that coach of a soccer team, you know?
Or that dude in Abducted in Plain Sight on Netflix. It's the same kind of thing, the whole grooming where you get the whole family into it.
Dan Reed, the documentarian who made this film about Neverland, stressed yesterday in the segment with Oprah Winfrey that even though it was about Michael Jackson, it wasn't really about Michael Jackson. It was about people who are predators like this. Speak to that a little bit. What were your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, from the PAXA parent perspective, we look at it and we say, regardless of whether this man is a superstar or not, he exhibited many red flags that parents need to watch out for, to what Tanya alluded to earlier, for anyone in their child's lives.
Yeah.
You need to take into consideration as a parent that these types of folks need access to children, And you have to just understand that in this world, there are people that view your child in a sexual manner.
Ugh.
And it's just something that you're going to have to understand as a parent and know that going forward so that you can be there to be an advocate advocate for your child.
Mm-hmm. So we love to say that packs of parents pay attention. So we're so busy as parents, career couples, you name it, single moms can be very vulnerable to this because they need all the help they can get. And in swoop in people who just want to be able to help you and lend a hand. Oh, thank you so much. But the reality is that, you know, it's happening day in and day out. And we're not really, really asking questions like, how did that sleepover go? You know, at Aunt Linda's house or whomever, like, who slept in your bedroom? Because a lot of these things, they're sneaky, you guys.
Right.
They are sneaky. They're sneaking in that bedroom. It's the teenage son because 35 to 40% of sex abuse is kids doing it to other kids. So it is not just the grown-ups you're watching for. It's like those big age discrepancies. And they're sneaking into the bathroom and pulling a little girl. And you want to know why we have so many examples? It's since we launched our charity in 2017, we have so many friends and family members and extensions of friends who've told us their personal stories. So we have examples, not because it's easy to Google. You just talk to victims, and just like how these victims did that on the documentary, the Michael Jackson documentary, the details are important to know because you're like, well, where is this happening? It's someone's, you know, older cousin bringing in the little girl into the bathroom saying, pull down your pants, bend over. Like, it's just like in a split second.
And Oprah pointed out, too, you know, the mom went to approach the theater and the door was locked. And Michael said, sorry, I didn't know the door was locked. And they were fully closed.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't think anything. Oh, well, they're closed. There's nothing going on. But something can still be going on over the clothes.
Yeah, I think that just goes back to red flags. Anytime a grown man is locked in a bedroom or sleeping in a bedroom with children,
that's not normal. That is not normal.
Why did the mom let they were at a hotel, and I can't remember which victim it was, but the mom said, you know, yeah, all right, you can sleep in Michael's room. Your sister and I'll sleep in this room. At 7 years old, how does that was Wade?
Yeah.
How does a mom say, "Yeah, go ahead, you're seven, go ahead and spend the night with"? How?
I think it goes back to the grooming component, and when you think of the way that, you know, high-profile predators in particular are able to groom families, this is really where they're able to convince moms to do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do.
Sure.
And they do that by encouraging the child to beg their mother.
Mm-hmm.
They do that by all sorts of tricks in order to get isolation and alone time with the child.
Well, in this case, there was a clear-cut example of they had stars in their eyes. That was Michael Jackson, the most famous guy in the world. But in everyday life, that's not always the case. The stars in your eyes doesn't apply to somebody's uncle or somebody's coach, right?
Right.
And I think that's where you can look for red flags. And red flags are when someone might single out maybe a coach or a Sunday school teacher or someone who has access to children might single out one for special praise, special attention, special gifts, might tell that parent that their child is so special and wonderful, might offer to do extracurricular activities in a alone setting with that child because they just care so much for that child. They want to take the kid out for ice cream.
Yeah.
Then what they do is they layer on the secrets component because there's a lot of secrecy that goes into this. And what they'll do is they'll weave in small secrets at first. Don't tell your mom, I'm getting you two scoops of ice cream instead of one.
Mm-hmm.
And they set the stage for a situation where they're able to make larger and larger secrets, and that's where they delve into the sexual activity.
We have to take a quick break. This is fascinating. Tanya and David Haig, founders of PAXA. You can go to PAXA.com. Because that's phonetically.
PAXA.online.
PAXA.online. Parents Against Child Abuse. It's Bill and Wendy. We'll continue next, 720 WGN. In the studio with us right now, Tanya and David Haig, founders of Parents Against Child Sex Abuse. And the acronym for that is PAXA, PAXA.online. That's where you can go find them. I do see that you were approached by HBO's The Tale to help support your grassroots efforts. And there's a special screening at the Gene Siskel Film Center Saturday, April 27th. First of all, what is The Tale?
Right. So last year, so HBO has just been bold, right? Last year, last spring, HBO released a film called The Tale. Laura Dern is the lead actress, and it's written and directed by Jennifer Fox. And it's her, it's based on her story of having been sexually abused as an early teen, preteen. So it's heartbreaking. And when we watched it, we believed that this was prior to the Leaving Neverland, that we believed that it was the first film we've ever actually seen really break down the predatory behavior. This was a little girl. She was in like horseback riding camp, her running coach, like all the tactics. There was a woman involved who was like bringing in these kids into this web of abuse. It is complicated, you guys. So we watched it. They approached us because it did so well at Sundance Film Festival, and then HBO picked it up, that they were reaching out to other nonprofits, including ourselves, to help them get the word out and screen the film.
Yeah. And parents need to see this.
And parents need to see it because, again, you know, we can talk about it. We can have blog posts. We can have awesome content that we produce through our annual Parent Empowerment Program. We have speakers that come in. But it's kind of like multimedia helps parents understand it, and they'll resonate and connect with something. And this film really does a nice job and break, it's hard to watch,
yeah,
but it breaks down these like tactics and what they're doing, and like the graphic nature of the abuse is important to see. Kind of like some folks, what happened and what was shared on Leaving Neverland was like too much for folks. Well, guess what? Those gory details need to be here because that's what's happening.
Sure.
It's not just, you know. So anyway, April 27th, We're hosting at Gene Siskel. We're also hosting a screening on April 7th in Oak Park at the Oak Park Main Library. But we're using it as another way to connect with parents on the subject.
We only have a very short amount of time, but I'm curious about this. The cycle of child sex abuse, which is to say somebody that was a victim and then later turning on later in life and becoming the abuser themselves. During the R. Kelly, the surviving R. Kelly documentary from last month, somebody said that he was abused as a child, so his way of reconciling that is to become the abuser, to take control of the situation. Is that true? Is that how it usually
Jackson,
works?
Michael Jackson, I believe, was abused too.
From a physical standpoint,
yes,
from his
definitely.
Dad.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems is drawing a direct line from being sexually abused to abusing children, and that's actually something that predators like to trot out once they're caught. They like to point
make an
back
excuse.
As an excuse for why they're doing what they're doing. To be clear, that in the type of households that have sexual fluidity between generations, where maybe there's an older teenage boy sexually abusing an 8-year-old, where there's a mom sexually abusing a son or a daughter, typically it's a male figure. It's either a father figure or an uncle, or it could be a stepfather, boyfriend. In these situations, a lot of the sexual abuse that occurs with children, many of them grow up and they don't sexually abuse children. They're victims, and they keep it quiet, and they suffer, like we saw in the documentary, as adults with their relationships with adults, as adults. One of the things that can happen is if you're in an environment where it's deemed to be okay, and it's something that the child enjoyed. Oftentimes, there are some environmental factors that can contribute to a situation where someone's more likely to become a predator themselves. But we are very cautious around this, and we try to give we try to make sure that we don't silence victims for fear that people are going to label them as molesters themselves when they grow older.
We need to talk to our kids about this. I have a lot to learn about this, too. All the information can be found at PAXA, PAXA.online, Parents Against Child Sex Abuse. And your screenings and all that information can be found on your website.
Yes, please. We're also trying to grow our Facebook following, so our handle is at PAXA Parents. We have a lot going on there, too, just to stay connected with a community of parents.
And how can we help?
Oh, my goodness. well, just continuing to promote, to have folks come to our website, keep the conversation going with Michael Jackson, R. Kelly. It's not a one and done. This is a 24/7 year-round problem. So we thank you for giving us the airtime to talk about it.
Thanks for taking on this challenge, because that's what it is, a challenge.
Yeah.
We appreciate your hard work.
Thanks, Joe and Wendy.
Founders of PAXA, Parents Against Child Sex Abuse. You can go to PAXA.com. Online. Tanya and David Haig, thank you very much. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you both.
Thank you. We'll take a break, get you some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
David, it's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Elizabeth Alfano is with us, and I have not been able to stop thinking about you, Elizabeth.
I love it.
Doesn't that sound strange?
It sounds wonderful, Wendy.
You're okay with it?
Sounds wonderful. Good.
Here's what happened. There was one day in the kitchen that Elizabeth brought some non-meat burgers, and I was 100% skeptical. I love hamburgers. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, whatever, I'll try it. I had had the Boca burgers in the past. I've had these veggie burgers, and it was just, it wasn't good.
Yeah, there's nothing even remotely comparable to a Boca burger and the Beyond Meat burger, okay. Which is what you had.
It is what I had, and there's a video of us on your Facebook page, and I'm saying, oh, this tastes like meat. I wasn't kidding.
Yeah.
Now, part of it was, Bill, it was grilled. So
that makes a big difference.
It does.
Yeah.
So Elizabeth has been kind enough to bring, this is the Beyond Burger.
Yep, the Beyond Burger. And Bill, I don't think you've tried it yet.
I've never had one. I've heard about it so much.
He's like Mikey, he hates everything.
Well, because to me, a hamburger should be hamburger flavored.
Fair enough. And we're going to see if this tastes hamburger flavored to you.
I have also been given the substitute, some of the ones that Wendy mentioned, and I have come away very disappointed.
Yeah.
Because they're shaped like hamburgers, but they don't taste like hamburgers.
No, and in fairness to them, I think they sell themselves as veggie burgers. I don't think they really sell themselves as a hamburger substitute.
Right.
But Beyond Meat is trying to go one-to-one. And there are some other folks out there, too, that are close to getting the taste right. There's the Impossible Burger, the Light Life Burger. But Beyond Meat is really leading the way, and you'll see when you go ahead and taste it that it's really a one for one, not only in taste but in texture, how it feels in your mouth,
the
when
color.
You chew, the mouth feel, the color, the weight
looks
in
like
your
a burger.
Hand.
It does look like one.
Totally
right.
Looks like
so
a burger.
What are they doing to pull this off? There must be some secret or two involved.
Well, so it's funny that you mention this. I'm actually doing a freelance piece for another station right now where we go into the lab and we see exactly all of the steps that they're doing. And something that we forget is that animals eat plants and then they make protein for us. So cows, gorillas, giraffes, rhino, hippopotamus. These are huge animals and they're herbivores. All
so
they do is eat plants.
So this is made out of gorilla?
No.
I'm okay with that.
I'm
just
saying
need to
that there's a lot
you.
Of protein in plants. And so what they're doing is they're finding protein. So this burger that you're about to bite into, Bill, has 20 grams of protein.
Okay.
So they're finding protein in the plant world and they're bringing that to the shape of a burger. So all they're doing is all the growing proteins are there in nature. They're just reformulating it.
All right.
So that's what they're doing in their lab. Then they're adding color from the plant world, like beets and a little bit of pepper and onion and garlic, all these natural things that you find in the plant world, and they're bringing that together to make a burger.
So instead of beef, like if this was a regular hamburger, this would be a beef patty.
Correct.
Instead of the beef, this is
pea protein, mung bean, lots of other proteins from the plant world that are just restructured to be in the shape of a burger.
Right.
And what you're going to find is that there are a lot of meat aromas and meat tastes in the plant world that you can just reformulate, and that's what you're tasting here.
It smells like meat. I am ready to go here. I have really doctored it up thanks to you.
Yeah, we got a lot of why thanks to me?
Because when I had this before, Elizabeth, it was just basically mustard and ketchup. That was it, and it was good.
Very basic.
Well, Bill was a baby about it and wanted lettuce, onion.
Yeah.
Elizabeth brought tomato for me. There's
cheese.
Avocado. There are pickles.
Bosco syrup.
Mayo. I can't wait for you to try this.
I'm anxious to try it. All right.
Yeah,
so
go ahead. I'll talk and you guys chew.
Is there anything I need to know? You're not going to surprise. Like a lot of times my wife will make something and then surprise me with an ingredient that she knows I don't like. Is there something in here that you go, oh, by the way, ...... is in there?
No, I think this is stuff you've actually had your whole life. You just didn't know it had protein. Okay, this next segment, it's all about chewing, people.
Be honest with me.
That's very good. It is very good. And it does taste like, honestly, you could fool me.
I know.
Tell me it
blind
was a hamburger,
test.
And I would believe you.
You wouldn't know.
So that's what I'm doing with my family, because I'm Catholic. Tomorrow's Ash Wednesday. And on Fridays, we typically have to have fish or some non-meat thing, but I am going to grill these Beyond Meat burgers.
Are these Pope approved? Has the Pope said this is okay on a Friday?
He sure should. I haven't discussed it with him personally.
Talk to the Pope, but please.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I just interviewed 12-year-old activist Genesis Butler, and she has gone to the Pope and said, Pope, please go vegan for Lent, because he talks about in his encyclical letter that we should be kinder to all beings, not just people, but also that we need to sort of start thinking about changing our lifestyle ways for the benefit of the planet.
Right.
So the Pope just might be going vegan for Lent. I mean, it makes so much sense because many Catholics do give up meat on Fridays or all 40 days, depending on who it is.
Yeah. And old school Catholics used to not eat meat on Fridays forever.
Yeah, right.
Just every Friday.
Right.
It was, for the whole year.
From a caloric standpoint, I know roughly what a hamburger would give me calorie-wise, the size.
Take another bite.
Is it a lot lower?
So there are a lot of health benefits here. So you're switching over from animal protein to plant protein. So that right away is going to give you a lot of cardiovascular help.
Sure.
In the calories wise, we're looking at about 270 for, 270 for the Beyond Meat burger.
Oh,
that's
pretty good.
Probably, yeah. I don't know what a regular hamburger is in calories, to tell you the truth. What is
500,
that?
600?
Oh, well,
depends what you put on it, too.
Yeah. No, this straight burger is 270, and it's 20 grams of protein.
Okay.
So
you know
you're
how
a lot
after a hamburger, 20 minutes later, you feel kind of full, like I shouldn't have eaten a big hamburger like that? Do you get that feeling with this?
Well, so it's interesting. People are always saying, like, you know, oh my gosh, I'm not going vegan. And I always say, like, okay, well, that's great.
Yeah.
Don't then. That's fine. All the real growth in this category is coming from meat eaters who are looking to go a little bit healthier.
Mm-hmm.
So not people who are giving up meat every day, but people are giving up meat on Fridays and maybe meatless Mondays because they feel better.
Mm-hmm.
So most people come to this from a health perspective, in that you're right, after you eat meat, not just hamburger but lots of meat, people kind of feel like, I can't really move.
Yeah.
I can't do much.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have that here. You feel really light.
But you feel full. You feel satisfied. That's the difference between this burger and other burgers I've had in the past that are not meat.
Yeah.
I didn't feel satisfied.
Yeah. Yeah, because they weren't going for that one-to-one replacement. So again, I just interviewed the founder, Ethan Brown, and he was saying the whole objective of the company is so that you cannot tell the difference. It's meant to be indistinguishable. And so they're really trying to go one-to-one in smell, in weight, in taste, in texture, and they're not stopping till they get there. So I think they're even still revamping. What you guys have now is a 1.0 burger, but they're coming out with a 2.0.
Something even more.
Yes.
There is, I'm sure you can tell, there is a slight taste difference. It doesn't taste 100% like what you're used to, but the trade-off is well worth it.
Yes. So you get so much health benefit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as we all start to think about the environment, there's been a lot of realization that animal agriculture is detrimental to the environment in terms of climate change. And as we look to reduce our impact on the planet's, you know, the negative impact, plant-based eating is going to be very helpful in that. And then I think also a lot of people do come to it because they feel better physically and they also feel better morally. Like,
I love animals.
Well, yeah,
I can't
really
think of them as animals as I'm eating a steak, and I can't be a vegetarian. I probably will never be.
Wendy won't eat animal crackers. I bring them in sometimes when she gets sick to her stomach.
Well, see, this is the best thing. So this is what we're talking about here. We are celebrating Fat Tuesday and Lent at the same time because we're not eating meat and we're being really decadent. And that's what plant-based eating is going to be as we move forward. Forget the days of Boca Burgers and those things. Like, that's done. There's a lot of plant-based options that are coming out now that taste really good so that people like you, Wendy, who say, like, I just love animals, can now do both.
Let's take a break. We'll discuss this further.
Be
Elizabeth
honest.
Alfano is here. I like it. I really do. You know, there was an adjustment when I went, I like chocolate milk a lot. And for a while, when I switched over to like the cashew version of chocolate milk, there was a little bit of an adjustment. It didn't taste quite right. But then all of a sudden, I liked it even more, you know?
Are you a closet vegan? I love it.
I don't know if I'm that deep.
But so you're switching over to cashew milk. When we come back.
His wife makes them.
Yeah,
I love it. Is she vegan or plant-based or whatever?
No.
So maybe when we come back, we can talk about the statistics. You'll be amazed the plant-based category, how much it has taken over of the milk category.
I'm sure.
Yeah, there's some incredible numbers to this.
Yeah, I'm seeing that already. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more discussion. Jump in if you like at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, Elizabeth Alfano, host of Awesome Vegans, the podcast that we have here at WGN+. What else do you do? My God, you're everywhere.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of plant-based cooking demos on TV lately. Just we head into Lent, and so a lot of people are looking for tasty tips and tricks to give up meat during Lent. So you can, of course, go to my website, elizabethalfano.com. That's been really fun. I've been doing lots of radio interviews, and then, of course, my podcast. So, and I do a lot of public speaking at Food Fest, so I've been
very
busy.
Nice. What do you miss most from your non-vegan days? What food is there that you just go, oh, I would love one of those again?
And what was the last meat or animal-based product that you ate? What was the last thing? Do you remember?
I have no clue.
It's been that long.
Here's what I can remember.
Don't you miss squirrel a little bit? Just a little bit?
Bill, we're going to have to talk. I probably miss pepperoni pizza, I don't miss the feeling I had after eating pepperoni pizza.
Yeah.
And that was, oh, God, I'm really sick.
Yeah.
So I don't miss that at all. That kind of washes out.
Isn't there a vegan pepperoni out
there?
Yes,
there's lots of that. Now, this is what I was saying before. The plant-based products out there, they're so much better, and there's so many of them. So some of the statistics that are fun is that plant-based foods are up 23% from last year.
23% in one year.
Yeah, it's incredible. And that's plant-based meats are up 23%. Plant-based foods in general are up 17%.
Wow.
Yeah, and a really fun statistic that I love is that in 2017, so that's a while ago now, Grubhub plant-based orders were up 19%.
That's tremendous. Do you foresee a day that when Lady Gaga wears a meat dress, it'll be a plant-based meat dress?
Yeah, I don't think she'd be walking around in a meat dress today. Oh, no, I foresee her actually wearing lots of plants.
Oh,
it's coming any
That's
day
excellent.
Now.
All right, I have been raving about the Beyond Burger. Elizabeth introduced me to it a couple months ago, and really, I've brought it up at home. My husband actually was the one who suggested, let's do this during Lent. Can I break it up and make sloppy joes with it?
Okay, so this is just a great question. So first of all, they have the Beyond Meat crumbles, so it comes as crumbles as well. If you want to make, you guys probably know Joel Murray, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I had Joel Murray on my podcast, and he's not vegan at all. And I said, "Hey, I just love being around you. You're so funny, and you know you're Chicago. So mm-hmm. what's wrong with that? Tell me your favorite meat dish, and I'll make it for you." And he said, "Pasta bolognese." I said, "Okay, I have got your number. I will make you plant-based pasta bolognese," and I made it with Beyond Meat crumbles. So you can get the crumbles, and you can cook with them at home. Or you can get the Beyond Meat burgers and Whole Foods. I mean, it's all over the place, really, at this point. You just kind of got to look for it. But I also want to give a shout out to Epic Burger because they brought in everything today. And you're going to see a lot of Beyond Meat burgers at restaurants around town. Specifically, Epic Burger has been championing that. And have you guys ever eaten at Epic Burger?
How many times? Yeah.
Okay, so you build your own burger.
Right.
Okay, just so Wendy knows. So you can build your own burger. You can put together whatever you want. And they've got a Beyond Meat option. And you can build your own Beyond Meat burger. And I love them because they're so guerrilla in their marketing. So they've been going outside of churches and saying like, hey, we got your number for Lent. Come to our place.
Wow.
You can have a Beyond
love
Meat
it.
Burger.
That's very bold.
Yeah, so bold.
Good.
I love it. No one was doing that when I was in Catholic school, Bill.
Nobody was. Which is the version they have at White Castle now? White Castle has a version of this, don't they?
They do. It's called the Impossible Burger.
That's the one,
and they've got that at White Castle, and I think it may be some other locations. I know Beyond Meat is now starting to go into the quick serve restaurant area. So A&W in Canada, and also Carl's Jr. Across the U.S. So you're going, I'm telling you, this is the future.
Yeah.
You're going to see it pop up more and more and more.
Good.
Be honest.
Yes.
You were thinking.
Apprehensive.
Very.
Yeah.
You're like, it's.
It's here's why, though. My wife, as much as I love her, likes to trick me, and she'll give me a food that isn't quite what it looks to be. And that's what I was afraid this would be, that it's shaped like a hamburger, and it looks like a hamburger, but it's not.
I would never trick you.
No, well, thank you for that.
But it is not. It is plant-based. There is no meat in it. Isn't it pretty? Is this not the closest thing to a burger you've eaten that isn't a burger?
Yeah.
And don't you feel like, again, like what we're doing today, we're getting the double whammy. You're giving up all that guilt. You're giving up all that heart disease. And you're not giving up anything on taste.
Right.
I mean, it's like miracle of miracles, folks.
So what will we feel guilty about? There must be something for us to still
feel. I got plenty.
That's another show, Bill.
All right.
And what drink did you bring? Because I have a feeling there's no dairy in this.
Oh, you are spot on and super good, right? So it's a coconut lemon blend from Epic Burger. They're doing, it's not quite a shake. It's more like a...
Almost like a smoothie.
It's really
smoothie,
good.
But it's super good, isn't it? Epic's the bomb.
It's got a lot of
so there's
flavor.
No dairy in this at all.
No, there's no dairy.
Pretty good, right?
I know.
Yeah. Can I ask from a cost standpoint? What? All right. So if you were going to get a box of hamburgers, a box of six or eight hamburgers, as opposed to a box of this, would you be paying more or less or the same?
I love this question. And absolutely, this is a new product that's rolling out. So, I mean, it's not that new, but it hasn't taken over everyone's plate every day. So you don't have the kind of scale that you have with regular meat. So it is going to be more expensive. I want to say two hamburger patties, so 8 ounces of meat total is probably going to be about $5.99.
So not bad.
Reasonable.
It's not untouchable. It is cost penny per penny. It's going to be a little bit more, but you're going to see that change as the scale ramps up, and you're going to see scale ramp up. I'm telling you, people, it's the future. You're going to see scale ramp up really quickly. Here.
Can I have my plant-based burger medium rare? I mean, how do you cook it? Is it pre-cooked? Do I not have to worry about it?
Oh, no, you have to cook it. You definitely have to cook it. But I think you can, play around and cook it to your taste. So some people like their burgers really sort of blackened, so you can just kind of play around with that. And then shout out to the folks again at Epic. It's a great pretzel burger, which also has no dairy in it that we brought
bun,
in.
Yeah.
It's super good. Quick thing we left off about your cashew
What's
milk.
What's that?
So, as I'm talking about the future, another incredible statistic. Plant-based milk is 13% of the milk category. I'm not talking about growth over last year, because, percentage growth is, if you have a small number, you can have a large percentage growth. I'm talking about how much market share it has of the market. That's 13% of the milk market is plant-based milk. So plant-based milk has done a great job of getting into the marketplace and giving people a healthier option. So I think you're going to see the same with plant-based meat.
Somewhere, Orion is grumbling because he does not like the word milk attached to anything that doesn't come from a cow or a goat. In my case, Wendy, I love the goat milk. Given that the word is not quite the right word, what do we call it? It's in the milk category.
Yes, and I think this has already gone to legal courts, and they're debating this sort of as we speak. And meat, the word meat has also been legally challenged in Tennessee, I believe.
Yeah.
Maybe I have that wrong. I have to double check. So I think the consumer's not a dope. I think most people know what milk is. Like, we use the word onion milk, at least my mother did with me when I was... not that you would drink
milk.
It. Not that you would drink it, but, if you're cooking and the onion has juice in it, because it's like a white filmy, you call it onion milk. I mean, no one thinks that you're going to drink onion milk for breakfast or that you put it in your coffee.
But an onion milkshake is so good.
That's growing faster than Beyond Meat, actually.
Her name is Elizabeth Alfano. You can find her all over the social media land. She hosts Awesome Vegans with Elizabeth Alfano. How long have you been a vegan?
Oh my gosh, I've been a vegan for 3 years, but really I wanted to be vegan my whole life. I just didn't know it was an option.
It was hard, probably, too, for a while.
It was so hard. Do I have time for the fastest of fast stories?
30 seconds.
30 seconds. Okay. When I was a kid, I never wanted to eat meat, and I would chew it, and I would just cry at the table. I just didn't like it. I didn't want it. My parents freaked out, and they're like, no, you have to eat it. And they would punish me pretty severely. You have to stay at the table, finish your meat. You're going to die otherwise. They were nervous for
me. Clean your plate. Yep.
So I just had this feeling like, I have no choice. I have to do it. And then when I found out about the plant-based world, I was like, oh, thank God I can stop doing that.
That would make a great ABC After School special.
Wouldn't it, though?
I would watch that every day.
What's your website?
ElizabethAlfano.com, ELYSABETH, Alfano.com.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Great to see you.
And thanks to Epic Burger. Pretty
thanks
good, wasn't
Burger.
It?
Oh, so
Epic
good.
Burger, we love you.
Coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.